Kia ora mai tātou. Te ariki tinu, kia koe meihana, kurua ko arohia, huri no kia tātou katoa, tēnā tātou. I guess my understanding of a panel was that you would try and speak to the points that your keynote speaker put down, but it's really hard to follow somebody like Linda, particularly when she's such an awesome storyteller. So I am going to try and try my best, but also I think to leverage off some of the things that she said in relation to the context that I work in. So Linda particularly talked about the development of our whānau and focusing on our whānau. For me, I want to kind of lift it up a little bit and look at how we can do that at an iwi level, because that's the context in which I've been privileged to work in for some time. Knowing that we've been talking about the 1984 Hui Taumata, what I would like to say is that I stand here as a product or an outcome or an output, whatever terminology you want to use. Academics love terminology, and I'd have to say that I don't understand half of it, but that really I am an outcome or a product of that. So in 1984, as Linda mentioned, you know, there was the Hui Taumata, but there was also the Māori Education Hui. Let me go back a year, and in 1983, Sir Robert Mahuta, together with Ken Egan, wrote what we within the tribe of Waikato Tainui refer to as our seminal report, which was called the Tainui Report. And in it, it attempted to document from our perspective where we were at the time, but more importantly, what were our aspirations for the future. And so spring forward, I guess, 10 years to 1995, Waikato Tainui was fortunate to be, through Sir Robert's leadership, the first to settle the contemporary claims. And from that was a very focused investment in higher education. And I recall at the time of the settlement, it was a very unpopular decision in the tribe to spend so much money on higher education. Not education, as the minister was talking about this morning, but higher education. And so actually it was interesting, Selwyn, how you talked about this investment. So certainly that was Sir Robert's vision at the time. It was an investment in the future. And it was really premised off māko anō e hangi tōku nei whare ko ngā pau o roto, he māhoe, he patete, ko te tāhuhu, he hino. And we talk about that as a literal rebuilding of a physical building. I think in the context that he used to talk about it, it was really about using education to rebuild our minds, to regain the hope and that we as a people can actually reclaim our own destiny and reshape our own futures. And so what he did, much to the chagrin of many of our tribal members, who were and still, I do acknowledge, are sitting in states of hopelessness, of that paucity that Tahu referred to earlier, of poverty, he felt that it was really important to invest in higher education to create opportunities for the younger ones, for our rangatahi at the time. I was a baby in 1984, or maybe not quite a baby, but for us going through the university system to be invested in. And so, you know, I'm very humbled, very proud also to say that I was the first recipient of the doctoral scholarship. Significant investment, as Selwyn talked about. But for me, it was really, at the time, I was just a typical student, wasn't really sure what I was doing, had done my BA, kind of took a five-year journey to do it. Was going to go to Teachers College because I didn't really know what I was going to do after my BA. Missed the deadline, so ended up enrolling in my MA. So, you know, I was really on this well-planned pathway to academic excellence. And then, you know, for my good fortune, you know, I'm one of those of the diaspora who wasn't actually, I'm not born and bred Waikato Tainui. I'm an urban person, and actually I did not know who I was and my connections to Waikato Tainui until I was at university. So I was one of those many who was disconnected. And when I actually found out about it, it was about the same time that I met my now husband, but at the time my boyfriend, who refused to move to this big city of Auckland, and so that required me to kind of shift further south to Hamilton. And so, you know, in the interest of looking for a job, I'd heard about this dude called Bob Mahuta, rang him up and said, hey, can I have a job? And in his wisdom, or stupidity, he took a punt. And, you know, it's really, I guess, that notion of whakapapa. He knew who I was and how I connected to the tribe, and he gave me an opportunity. And out of that, he then invested in me, not just in me, there were a whole group of us. And then spring forward to where I have the privilege of standing today, proud to say that I am a product of his vision out of what has come over the last 30 years of what we call development for Māori. I say that also because I'm not the only one in this room, and nor am I the only one who's stood up here over the last 2 days who has benefited from our tribe's investment in our people. So I look around the room and I can see a number of very familiar faces, some of whom I haven't seen for quite some time, but also who've spoken over the last couple of days, who have directly benefited from the investment that Waikato Tainui has made, and that investment which sprung from the vision of Sir Robert Mahuta. So why do I say that? I say that because we're talking about workforce development, and I think his notion was that we create opportunities, and opportunities are created not necessarily through resources. Obviously, he was very clear that the post-settlement focused resource, we talked about the economic development. What I'm wanting to emphasise is our human capacity and our human capability and the growth of that, and how important that is in being able to develop ourselves in the future. Sir Robert was known as a very visionary person, and often it took the tribe a decade or so to catch up with his vision. And again, I have the privilege of working at the Waikato Tainui College for Research and Development, and I acknowledge, aroha, that development is a problematic term, but we have grasped it nevertheless. And his vision was really to create a physical space, the college being a space of thought leadership, a space of hope, and a space for liberatory thinking. So what does that mean? I go back to that notion of Kingi Tawhau's words, Makua no. And perhaps for us younger ones in the room, Makua no sounds not too dissimilar to the words of Bob Marley, emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. It is really about grasping and taking that notion of mana motuhake and redefining it in ways that make meaning for us. And so that's really what the physical entity that we have now at Hopuhopu is about. But one of the things I also want to pick up on is that the vision of the college and what we are trying to do is not just about investing. There's this economic development kōrero that's been going on for the last couple of days. And we talk about investing in our people. It can't be done at the expense of our values as a people. And for us, those values are firmly embedded in kingitanga. And why I say that is that often people, when they come to the college, they say, wow, this is a really beautiful place. You know, as the tribe, you're so fortunate to have it. And often I have to remind them that when Te Ariki Nui Te Atai Rangikahu opened our college in 2000, she was very clear, both to our tribe, but also to the motu and to the world, that this was the tribe's gift to the nation. And so often we talk about iwi moving into post-settlement states and wanting to develop and build their own buildings. Let me tell you, I was there during the building of the college, and as Linda said, it brings out those sorts of situations, bring out some really gnarly things in people. And so, you know, we would have architects trying to tell our kaumātua that the colour of our river, which is represented in the carpet tiles that are being presented, and we're looking at them and they're brown. And understanding, you know, we know our river is paru, but really, you know, let us take us to a space of inspiration and at least make it blue. So, you know, it kind of brings out different things like that. But the point I'm wanting to make here is that the physical entity that is the college is that we are here for the motu and actually for the world. Our view is that not all of our tribe can afford to go out into the world and experience what life has to offer. that still remains the privilege of a very few, many of us who are here in this room today. So we work hard to try and bring what the world has to offer to our people through this physical entity that is the college. And in terms of this connection with workforce development, the way in which we've tried to do that is to cherry-pick some programs that we think can contribute to our advancement and development as a people. And so we've also formed strategic relationships with institutions to enable us to do that. And I just want to touch on a couple of them today. Firstly, one is about the MBA program. So I am interested, and I was talking to Shelley Spiller yesterday around this new qualification. I'd like to say that we're actually already doing it. In the words of Te Puia, mahi a te mahi. Sometimes the institutions, and my experience of working in institutions, is you've got the QAPs, the IPNs, the APNs, the WATNs, to whatever ends, and does it actually achieve what it is that we need it to achieve? The MBA qualification is not our qualification. It's a university qualification, and we acknowledge that. But what we have done is that we have formed and we have pushed and we have prodded the University of Waikato, whose qualification it is, to deliver it at the college in a way that best suits the needs of our people. So what that means is that we contract in lecturers from around the country, and I'm looking at a few of you here who have been, we have been blessed to have come and deliver the program from a Māori perspective, from an Indigenous perspective. And we've also been able to leverage the relationships that our tribe has to ensure that we have leaders across the business world, across the academic world, across the research world, who are able to come and contextualise some of that technical academic jargon, and actually what does that look like in practice. And so what we have is the opportunity to create advancement and real advancement for our people. And our first cohort of students, only half of them were from the tribe, the rest were from the Motu. And so we are now in our third cohort, and again, you know, half of them from the tribe, the rest from the Motu, and one also who is a Pākehā, who wants to understand and learn from our perspective. So we talk about growing leadership, and that's been a key platform in terms of workforce development for us. But growing leadership is also not just in the business world. As Aroha said, you know, this, if you're going to place a lot of emphasis on te reo, then you also need to provide opportunities to create leadership for te reo within your own organisation. And again, alongside our MBA, we have a relationship with Te Wānanga Raukawa to deliver their tahuhu mātauranga Māori. Because it's no good for us if we have our business leaders who are so culturally disconnected from who we are as a people and who can't actually stand up and be able to deliver a basic mihi, let alone a kia ora. So those things are really, you know, they're integral. You can't have one without the other, and we make no apologies about that. As we've kind of developed over the last few years, we've recognised that governance seems to be a key word, flavour of the month, I'm not too sure. I'm certainly interested in these notions of inter and intra-iwi, and what does that mean? For us as a tribe, we are the shining examples around good governance. And I say that because, and knowing that we have our governors here in the room today. You know, since 1995, actually since 1998, when we moved into our very first concept of what tino rangatiratanga meant for us, to where we are now, it's taken us nearly 20 years to actually decide maybe we need to review ourselves. Maybe we need to take this concept of thought leadership, to have some courage to look at the fact that we've been in court how many times over the last 10, 15 years, the fact that actually, maybe we're not doing such a good job after all. So the point about governance, because people then say, well, you did such a crap job at it, so why are you now delivering some programs around governance? For us, this is our contribution about what not to do. And, you know, I think in all seriousness, it's really about, you know, this notion of what a super iwi is. And I was really troubled when our tribe released its financial results this year because the media kind of picks up that, you know, Tainui are now a $1 billion company. And I was thinking, yeah, and so what? $1 billion means nothing if we don't have the principles of good relationships, of strong leadership, of understanding what it means to govern ourselves as a people and to ensure that we have that mana motuhake. And so that's the point I make about the money, the economic development. Yes, it's important, but it cannot ever be more important than these core principles and values. And so we've moved into governance, and we have been actually really supported by Ngāi Tahu in that context. And I think, again, it's the opportunity that those of us that have been there and done that, and more importantly for us at the college, in the spirit of kingitanga, it is about being able to share our learnings. So those iwi who are less resourced, but who want to learn and who want to understand not to make the same mistakes, come to us, and we are open in our learning and sharing of that information. So the idea of this college as a physical space, it is really about providing that thought leadership, about providing those spaces of hope, about creating an opportunity for free thinking, because out of free thinking, I think, then comes change, the opportunity to think about a better future. And one of the things we did with our governance program this year is we engaged our rangatahi and we asked them to come and speak to our leaders. Because if we are actually talking about Te Pairua 2040, where are our rangatahi in that? Because they are actually going to be in front of this microphone in 2040. And so we did a similar exercise. We asked them to come and talk to our leaders and do a critique around, you know, as governors, you spend all of this time talking about strategic thinking and planning, and you have these budgets, and you're trying to run this program and that program. But from a rangatahi perspective, what does that actually look like for you? When you're in our shoes, what are your hopes? And really, some of them were quite simple. As Linda said, they would like their own children to be happy, to be culturally connected, to be proud to say that they are Ngāi Tahu, they are Waikato Tainui, or whatever other iwi they are from. You know, those are very simple aspirations. And I think really the challenge for us, if we're talking about workforce development, capability building, is how do we ensure that the programs that we're trying to develop, that the succession plans that we're trying to put in place now actually meet the aspirations of the generation we're supposedly working towards. So I know I think I've gone way over time, but I did just want to acknowledge the opportunity to speak, an opportunity, again, I would like to go back in mihi to Sir Robert Mahuta for being the visionary within our tribe, but also I would like to mihi to Lady Raiha Mahuta, because after he passed away, she took up the mantle of ensuring the college would be established. And she actually passed away the day I was supposed to sign my contract. And in the first few months after she passed away, I often used to swear at her in her absence, because she left us trying to figure out this gnarliness that was an iwi tribal organisation. And I can't recall the number of times that I pulled my resignation letter out of the bottom drawer and talked to Lady Rai and say, this is all your fault. But then I also had to be reminded that actually it wasn't just Lady Raiha's fault. It was also, I would say, the fault of Professor Linda Smith and Professor Sir Mason Jury, who were on my appointments panel. So I guess in Lady Raiha's wisdom, she thought she'd share the blame if everything all went to custard. So hui anō, I think really just what I'd like to leave is that when we're talking workforce development, we're talking investment in our people. So this economic argument is an economic argument. We have the ebbs and flows, and those are real challenges for us. But we can't and should not lose sight of what it really means, and that is our future generations, and that they are our tamariki mokopuna. Kia ora tātou.